So in my opinion, the secret to being everybody's favorite neighbor or favorite friend is always having the opportunity to show up with a handful of blooms at the ready. And the way you do that is you have a cut flower garden in your yard that you can easily snip a few blooms and make someone's day with. So today, I went back into the archives for the Best of Growing Joy series, where we're bringing back old episodes and giving them new life. And I'm bringing you a conversation with a flower farmer and friend of mine, Brooklyn of Blooming Hill Farms. She's a Denver-based urban flower farmer and founder of the Cool Choice Plant Studio for Kids. And in this conversation, we break down cut flower gardening for beginners. We're talking easy annuals, faithful perennials, pinching, deadheading, and how to really confidently have a cut flower garden this year with no fear, right? Because it's all about experimenting and obviously growing joy. So without further ado, here's Brooklyn.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
I'm so excited for this conversation.
I'm excited too. It's been a little bit of a long time coming, but it's the right time.
You're one of my new plant friends that I met on Clubhouse and who I want to be when I grow up, because you're a cut flower farmer. And the more that I think about garden planning, the more I get obsessed with flowers. And I know our community is really excited about this conversation on cut flower farming basics. But before we dive into that, I have had the pleasure of getting to know you through Clubhouse and through the Grow Food for Life Summit that we did. But do you want to introduce yourself to our community and tell us about all of the different planty entrepreneurial endeavors you currently do all at once?
Yes. And thank you, Maria, for having me. You've just been so sweet and welcoming from the start, and I appreciate you. I'm Brooklyn. I am a flower farmer. This is a switch from what I would normally do as a grower. I was growing food plants at first, and then something about flowers, the versatility, the beauty, it's just so much that you can do and the joy that flowers bring.
The amount of stuff you do every time we talk, you're like juggling so many things. You're so impressive. And the flowers that you grow, are you selling them to local florists? Are you bringing them to farmers markets? Like, where do the flowers end up?
Flowers, I work with a lady named Bree. She's a florist here in Colorado, and we kind of partner together. I grow, she designs beautiful bouquets. And so we have that connection. And recently, DoorDash has this thing where you can sell your flowers too. So we partnered with them. And so it's just kind of cool to reach more people, but I work with her. I don't have that gift that I to design or that desire. So I work with a florist and she takes care of my babies.
Love it. That's amazing. So this episode is going to be geared towards the growing aspect of cut flowers, not the cutting and arranging. We're going to have my wedding florist on for an episode later on that. But it's interesting thinking about flowers in the garden. I think I've always been so fixated on growing food, specifically tomatoes and basil, and growing herbs and edibles, that I've never really considered flowers. Flowers are important, I feel like, for so many different reasons. Obviously, they're beautiful and incredibly joyful, but they're also like hugely important for pollinators, which are what make the tomatoes grow, right? Like, why would you suggest that everybody has flowers in their garden?
I think you hit a very important part. Number one, if you have a growing space, you want to kind of make it an ecosystem. So welcoming to the pollinators, as well as you can use your flowers for compost as well for later. Some of the flowers serve as dual purpose, where you can make teas and they're edible. And so they're good for you as well. And you're bringing joy to people as gifts. And I'm 100% believer in having flowers in your growing space. even what it does for sight, like the different points that it makes when you're doing your garden design and layout. It just can create an experience and an environment that is just comfortable and relaxing for so many people. And I feel like, and I just will share this really quickly, my first encounter with flowers was from my mom, and we used to help her plant. And of course, I didn't want to do that back then, but my mom passed away last year. And so when I'm growing, I'm thinking about my mom and I'm like, oh, my mom would love this. And just that connection. And I feel like that seed that she put in me so many years ago is like birthed out now to what I'm doing in my purpose and passion. So it can get really deep, but also just be something as simple as bringing a smile to someone's face.
That's so beautiful. My mom, in her old house, my parents just moved to Florida, but in the old house, she grew 350 sunflowers on her front lawn every summer. And it was always a battle with the chipmunks of like how we would get those sunflower seedlings like not eaten. But she would have basically a sunflower field in her front yard that she got to look at through her office window. I always now will have one sunflower in every home that I just will buy like a little seedling in the pot to think of her. And they recently just relocated to Florida and she's going through a little bit of a, I guess, landscape shock, like just Florida, like all the plants that she used to grow in New York, like are not going to survive down there. But she planted it. They have like this tiny backyard in their rental and she planted like 20 sunflowers and has this whole sunflower thing. But it was very interesting to watch her use that those sunflowers almost as a way to anchor her to that feeling of home, even though everything else around her is so different. And I do think flowers do that. And I've been doing a lot of research on flowers. And also I feel like there's research or there's a theory that like from an evolutionary standpoint, like we know that flowers turn into fruit, like flowers could be a source of food. So also like we are innately kind of attracted to them, like from a biophilic kind of standpoint. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Yes. Wow. Yeah. That's, but it's so true too, though. So it makes sense.
So now that we've basically said everybody has to do flowers, whether for emotional or also just like pollinator benefits of your garden, I do think that flowers are intimidating to people who like me have only kind of been obsessed with growing basil or a tomato. To me, they feel very foreign and like I'm probably going to mess them up. And I feel like I don't know what to choose as a beginner. So a beginner, flat person who wants to grow a little bit more joy in their life, what would you suggest? Like, how do you evaluate seed packets and species? Like, how has your passion for flowers developed and what would you recommend a beginner?
Okay, so I just kind of jumped in and thought like, oh, I like this, so I'm just going to give it a try. That's not always the best way to go, although, you know, you'll try. I always encourage people to try because you're going to try. If you're listening and you like a certain flower, you're probably going to try it anyways just because you like it, right?
Absolutely.
Here's a few tips. You know, you do want to know what zone you're in. That's so important. I know you guys have been doing your series on gardening and I'm sure you've talked about knowing your zone and you can find that out just by going on the USDA's website and figuring out what zone you're in, because that's important. Unfortunately, I'm in zone 5B, and so my growing season isn't that long. I also live in Colorado, and our soil is very clay-like. It needed a lot of amendments going into the nutrients. It's just a lot of things that you have to consider before even starting, because much like your food plants, flowers require different soils, lighting, things of that nature, temperatures as well. So just do your homework on that before you even pick up a seed packet. So you mentioned the seed packets, read the seed packets. You know, I've read the seed packets. I've watched YouTube and I even bought books. As well, there's also podcasts that are out there, different things that you can listen to do additional research, right? So make your wish list. If you like zinnias, if you like dahlias, if you like lisianthus, whatever, gladiolas, make your list, read those packets, read from the company that you're going to ship from, read about them, their practices. If you want to have an organic farm, make sure the people that you're buying the seeds from have the same practices as you have before you even start. So that's a little bit of homework before you're even starting planting. So I would say The easiest flowers to start off with are going to be some annuals. I'll give you guys the annuals first. Sunflowers are easy. I think they are extremely easy. There are so many different varieties from height to color. They're just beautiful and they're a crowd pleaser. You can't go wrong with those. Zinnias are another summer annual that very easy to grow, very beautiful. There's so many different styles and textures to choose from. You really can't go wrong with those. I know a lot of people don't mention this next flower a lot, but I like it. I think it maybe not get as much shine, but straw flower is very easy as well. You know, the soil requirements are very minimal. It is like, it'll survive, you know? So if you need a win, try straw flower. It's very textured and it's good as a dried flower as well.
I just Googled it because I've never heard of that. They're so cute. And there's a lot of blooms. It almost looks like a cross between a zinnia and a sunflower. It's got like tons of little petals on the side and like a big bright center.
Yep. And if you touch it, it's like straw, like it makes sound like, I don't want to say like a broom, but it has that name for a reason, right? So definitely try those out. I would also recommend snapdragons are very easy. I love snapdragons. I know we were just talking about those. They're very beautiful. You can get very long stems as well. The color varieties are insane. I think they look great in bouquets as well. And if you just had those, how many was that? 1, 2, 3. I think it was
sunflower, zinnia, straw flower, and snapdragons. It's a good starter kit.
That's a good starter kit. And I think people would get mad if I didn't mention snap peas and cosmos as well. Daisies are easy too. Look, I feel like I'm going to keep going, but I wanted to give you guys some options because cosmos are a classic. Sweet peas are classic as well. Poppies are easy too. I just want to say poppies because this year in the winter, I literally put them all into a container and just threw them on the soil and that's it. Like I didn't cover them.
It's an annual or a perennial?
They're an annual.
Oh, they are. So one of my biggest indulgences is that I have the subscriptions to Better Homes and Gardens and Martha Stewart Living. And Martha Stewart Living just had a whole spread on her poppy collection. And Martha has like a whole poppy garden.
Martha is like goals.
Yeah, total goals. Okay, cool. And also let's just before, because this is something that took me a really long time to learn. So I want to reiterate it for people who might still get confused. Annuals versus perennials. So annuals are one stop, 1 year. You're going to buy it. You're going to plant it. It's going to bloom and then it's going to die and that's it. Perennials are going to come back every year if you're in the right zone, correct?
Right. Yep. You have to be in a certain zone. And I will say I did have to backtrack a little bit. For me, I'm in 5B. Poppies are annual. So look in your zone. If they are perennials, it's very short-lived. Like I would count it as an annual, but just check your zone and make sure if it'll come back. There are biennials and they are come back every other year. And like foxgloves are an example of that. And they are so beautiful. Oh my gosh, they're very, very pretty. And the color variety is insane as well for that too. So I just wanted to put that third one out there too.
Then to me, I'm in rentals right now. We're hopefully going to buy a house in the next year to 2 years. And as I start vision boarding that, to me, a perennial garden is very appealing because you plant it once and then the plants just keep coming back. So what if maybe, I think we've had a lot of people in our community that have just bought their first homes, are just trying to figure out their landscapes this year. What are your favorite perennials that you would suggest people playing around with?
So if you find a space that like you want to be just like the envy of the neighborhood, but you also can be patient. You have to have a peony. Like,
yes, I'm so happy you said that.
You don't have to do anything crazy or buy a very expensive variety or anything like that. But I'm telling you, that is one of my favorites. I love peonies are just, they're beautiful. So that's something, it will come back every year. But the thing about them, the first few years, you want to give them time to develop before you go cutting them and, you know, bringing them inside. You have to be patient with them and let them come into their glory, you know, their best selves. So they'll grow great. And that's maybe one of the number one things that I'll say. Obviously, roses will come back every year. If you're in a warmer climate, dahlias will come back. And dahlias, oh my gosh, they are in my top five. They're beautiful. They come in so many different varieties. They're just gorgeous. So that's something that I would suggest. Yarrow is a really great filler. It'll come back every year.
What's it called? Yarrow? Like Y-A-R-O?
Y-A-R-R-O-W.
Okay.
So it'll come back every year. You'll also be able to do, if you want to do echinacea, and it's a cone flower. So if you want to do it's a purple cone flower or different pawpaws, it's a white pawpaw you could do. That will come back every year. And depending on how many you'd like to plant, I've seen them planted like in a wild flower type of way because it's a good pollinator. So having that come back, but there's so many different color varieties. Mm-hmm. That's a good one to have as well. Let me think.
That's a good list.
Tulips will come back too, but you know, you can't keep cut. Like if you cut them, you'll have to replant the bulbs. But tulips is another good one that will come back for you every year.
Okay, you've given us so many good options. Now, another thought that I had and something that my mother was very good at doing is strategically, we also had a listener write in asking about this, like succession planting so that you have something in bloom in your garden all season long, from like the daffodils coming up early spring to the Montauk daisies to the sunflower to, you know, how can you tell when the flower blooms? Like, how would I plan that?
There are some flowers that you'll start in the fall and then they'll bloom early spring. So you mentioned daffodils. You can try to overwinter, which is when you overwinter something, that means you just, you let it go dormant and you'll plant it in the fall or early winter, and then it'll come up during the spring. So some of those varieties that'll pop up for you during springs are tulips, the daffodils, ranunculus. You can do the poppy, as I mentioned, snapdragons, anemones. What else can you do? Those are main ones that I can think of right away. Yes, iris, allium you can do as well. That is something you'll just kind of make a list as you guys are doing your research on the different plants that you like. Pay attention kind of to when their bloom date is, and then you'll plan according. So you might start this like this fall. I'll have all my bulbs and corums and all of those things that I need in order to have that first round of spring blooms. If you have a peonies, if you plan on doing peonies, they're blooming. They're almost done blooming because it's getting warmer. So that's a spring bloom that you'll get. So that's something too that you'll want to add on your spring list. And then you'll go into the warmer months of summer where you'll have your sunflower and the straw flowers and your amaranth and zinnias and lisianthus, the black-eyed Susans, which is rudbeckia, cosmos, and all of those plants. So, or flowers, you want to kind of make a calendar. Like if you're really, like I'm a flower farmer, so I'm going to be a little bit more organized and timely about it and structured to where I know what's going to come up during this time, during that time, you know. But I would say maybe start with a few different varieties. Don't overwhelm yourself. I'm naming a lot of different flowers in the different bloom times. But I do want to say, like, you don't have to have all of these flowers to have a beautiful cut flower garden. Like, you don't need all of this stuff.
You could have one pot of zinnias and be thrilled, you know.
Yes.
Or you could have a couple of sunflowers. Or one echinacea. I think that's a great point. It's like we're giving a lot of information in this episode meant for people to cherry pick what resonates with them. And I think, you know, you brought up earlier, and this is a very similar piece of advice given on this podcast and a lot of edible gardening, but pick what you want to eat and then figure out how to grow it. I think it's very similar. Pick what flowers you like and then figure out how to grow them. And one thing I will say is, as a beginner gardener, Territorial Seed Company, who I worked with, they were a sponsor on the podcast this winter. They have an amazing garden planner on their website. And as I was planning my raised beds, I was putting in the plants, and it tells you, the garden planner, like, automatically, you know, computes with your zone. Like, this is when you start the seeds. This is when you transplant. This is when they're going to bloom. This is when they're going to die back. And I found that being helpful too. So people, if you're a beginner, you could try, you know, using one of the many electronic garden planners as well. But there's something to also figuring it out by learning how to read a seed packet, I think.
Definitely. And I will, just one last thing I will say, like, you'll have between summer and fall, some of these will bloom all summer long and going into fall until you get your first frost. So you don't have to, if you just love sunflowers, just, you know, they'll produce for you. Just continue to add more seeds if you want to change the variety of color. Like right now, I'm working on my fall colors, the chocolates and the burgundies, so that they'll be ready for the end of summer, beginning of fall. So you just want to time things out. Like I probably, you know, honestly, I know a guy that he just only does sunflowers, but the variety and color and length, it just makes for a beautiful cut flower in general.
So what about this term cut and come again? Because I think that's what everybody wants, right? The plant where you buy one plant and then you get to have more than just one flower. You know, you plant a tulip bulb, you're going to get one tulip out of it, basically, or a couple. What are your favorite, like, cut and come again varieties that you like?
I would say this zinnia has, for me, I think is the crown on that. Like, you can cut them and they'll come back. Zinnias, hands down.
My mom had a lot of echinacea too. Well, I think no, rudbeckias. And I do feel like that's another one where you just get so many flowers that I feel like you can cut a few and just constantly have flowers around, you know?
Yes, that's a favorite for so many people. It's a classic. Same thing with snapdragons too, though. Like, well, depending on, they produce so many stems, right? You want something too that just will branch off and give you so many different flowers that you can cut them and you don't have to worry about, well, my plant is looking bare or this or that. I know we're going to get into pinching a little bit later, but I think snapdragon is an excellent producer as well. Cosmos produce really good too.
Okay. So yes, I definitely want to get into the pinching, deadheading. But before we get into that, let's just do a like flower gardening, growing basics crash course of potting medium, watering, light, like in general. And obviously everybody read your seed packets. It's going to vary a little bit. But if I'm making my first cut flower garden, you know, or a raised bed, what do I need to think about?
You need to think about soil. Most flowers do like well-draining soil. And that basically means, like I've mentioned before, I have a clay soil. So that's going to hold water. It's just very tough to work with. So if you are using a well-draining soil, you want to have something that maybe has peat moss in it or compost too. You want to add that in there too. So you could do a mixture of maybe if you want to make your own, a peat moss with some compost and then throw in some perlite. That's a good mixture. Also, you can just buy a bag of garden soil if you'd like. I know everyone doesn't have access to certain things, so I never want to exclude anyone. If all you can do is buy a bag of soil and use a pot or a container, you can grow. You can also use grow bags. There are things with my soil, like I said, that's kind of clay. It just won't work out. Like straw flower, I've been able to just kind of throw those out there and work with it. But if you this year you want to do something a little bit more fancier that needs a loose draining soil, go ahead and get a container or a grow bag. Don't let that stop you. Your soil condition stop you from having beautiful flowers. There's so many different beautiful planters out there. You mentioned beds. You can, if you can, you can make a bed and start from scratch and build your own soil that way. So whatever medium you use, you want it to give nutrients as well as whatever the packet says that the seeds need at the end of the day. So make sure you're doing that. It doesn't have to be complicated at all. I do know people that just use compost as well. So, and if you don't make your own compost, you can reach out to a local company. I know people that have gotten compost from a zoo. So just kind of research and you could just use that as well. I know they do that a lot in Europe, just use compost for a lot of their flowers.
So are they heavy feeders, flowers, if you're sticking them in compost? Do they require a lot of fertilizing throughout the summer?
Well, it depends on the flower. So when you're starting dahlias, for instance, if you have a tuber, it just likes regular potting soil. I start them in basic potting soil. They don't like a lot of fertilizer. So it's just, when I say a very basic potting soil mix, I sit it in a container and it just grows. So like it depends on the flower. So you guys really have to do your research. But I do want to say, when you're waiting for those blooms to grow, or if you see some yellowing on your flowers, you really have to feed them. And that's where the NPK comes from. I know you guys probably have talked about that already. The N is the nitrogen, your phosphorus, and your potassium. And I feel like the main two with your flowers, you really want to make sure you have enough nitrogen, because that foliage, that greenery, you want it to look green and not yellow or stale. I use a lot of coffee grains for that. I'll just, when I'm done with my coffee this year, I've started just putting the coffee grains into a plastic container, putting water in it, and then just putting it directly on the plants. Last year, I would just take my dried out coffee and just sit it on top of the plant just to add that nitrogen. And then for phosphorus, I'm using bone meal, and you guys can buy that at the store. That promotes the blooming in your regular plants, fruit formation as well. So those two are so important with flowers.
Well, it's interesting too, because I guess N of the NPK, N is about leaf growth, P is about bloom growth. So I guess too, planting with knowing that N is important, and then when it's time to bloom, knowing that P is super important. Melody just had me, I'm a garden apprentice to this nice woman, one of my neighbors, and she had me top dressing her flower garden with compost today. The flowers had been planted for about a month. And she says once every 6 weeks, she top dresses her flowers with compost just to kind of give them a little bit extra boost throughout the season.
Yes, that's definitely true. And if you don't, the plants will definitely tell you, and they'll show you. With I planted some zinnias earlier indoors, and now they're tall and they look great, but they weren't blooming. And so I'm like, okay, they're green. Let me add some bone meal. And sure enough, they're starting to flower and they're looking great. So your plants will tell you. I mean, but you just want to be in the routine and the habit of adding, especially as they're growing, they're getting bigger. Earlier on, when you're first starting out, the potassium, it helps to develop the root system. So that's going to be very important when you're just starting out too. So just pay attention, but know once you're in the thick of things and you want those green leaves and you want your blooms, the first two, that N and that P, is going to be very important.
And when it comes to light, in my experience, at least with the flowers that I've started this year, I feel like in general, flowers really do need more light than, like, there are very few shade flowers, right?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Placement is so important. And when I say placement, you need to know north, south, east, west, whatever, the time of day, how much sun you're getting, because I made the mistake earlier on and burnt some roses.
Oh no.
They only needed part shade, and they got burnt up. And so your plants can fry. Although a lot of, when we get into the sunflowers, and a lot of them are heat tolerant, right? So they need that heat. They want that heat. They don't mind the sunlight, but there are a lot of plants that only want part sunlight. And listen to that, because they will fry. It just, this year has been so crazy too, though, because it's like we've been experiencing high 90s and the hundreds. And so in Colorado, we went from winter to summer. So
yeah, New York too.
It's been weird. So you want to just make sure. And if you guys are direct sowing your seeds and you're not starting them indoors, you want to make sure you put them in the place where they're getting that. Some of them need that 6 hours a day. They need that heat, you know, 70 degree. They won't germinate without it. Read back it. So so it is important, Maria.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I feel like January, February, I had all this overwhelm trying to plan my first garden, what flowers to order. You know, I think it's super easy to get super overwhelmed. I also just think you just learn so much by doing in that first summer. And even just me leaning into just being like, okay, what does the seed packet say? Really learning how to read a seed packet and interpret that knowledge and get some good books and find some good online resources and just figure it out and try. Because I feel like a crash course in like flower, like light, whatever, obviously it's going to be dependent. You know, even just snapdragons, I started unsuccessfully. There was a mouse in the greenhouse that ate all my zinnia seeds twice. So I have one zinnia from an entire packet. But then like something so interesting, Snapdragon Seeds said very specifically on these seed packets, and shout out to Territorial Seed Company, but you have to expose Snapdragon seeds to light for a 12-hour period. They have like very specific seed starting instructions that were very different than the Zinnia seeds. And you just kind of like figure it out, you know? And I think there's a lot to say about that, you know, is just kind of empowering yourself and figuring out the seed packet and trying it and maybe sometimes failing and then trying again.
Yes. And let's just take a moment to say mistakes happen or things come up like your mouse. And with me, I left my son to water my plants, my whole tray of beautiful snapdragons. I can't even think about it. And he forgot to water them. So when I came back, they all died. And if you don't know this, snapdragons have a harvesting date of like 110 days. So you have to start them early. They're not something, same thing with Lysianthus, they take forever. You have to start those seeds very early in your window to just start them over. And it's a bummer. So things will happen. But the good thing that, and I also want to promote this too, you always can buy seed starts or plant starts. Starter plants, whatever you want to call them, you always can buy those. Like you can buy them from the store and you can take care of them and still have a beautiful garden and try again next year. You know,
I think that's an important point. Another thing that I'm just learning through my first process of trying to grow stuff outdoors, I'm really learning what's worth starting from seed and what is not worth starting from seed and what is just worth buying the seed start.
Yes, you're speaking to me right now. I'm like,
you know, Yes. And I think like I love starting my tomatoes from seed because I get to choose the exact variety that I want, right? Snapdragons, don't think I'm going to start my snapdragons from seed next year. Think I'm going to buy that. Think I'm going to do the zinnias from seed again to try. And I hear zinnias are a good direct sow as well. Like they're easy to direct sow into the garden instead of starting early. But like, yeah, I think there's also something to say of trying to do it all from experience being like, this one wasn't worth it. I'm going to buy my basil seedling starts, you know, like the stuff that's easier to cut or marigolds, you know? So I thought that was super interesting. But okay, so everybody read your seed packets to figure out the care once you've picked what you want. Get your timing right. We covered annuals versus perennials. What about anything to know when either we've started seeds indoors and we have our little seedling that we want to transplant into the garden or we buy one? Any like transplanting things that we need to know about roots and stuff like that?
All right. So some plants are very sensitive and do not transplant very well. And I know we've been talking about a lot about sunflowers, but I feel like that's a great just place to start. Their roots are very sensitive. And I'm rebellious, though. This is my first year doing this, though. I started them in seed trays, some of them, not all of them. Most of them I just started in ground. But I felt like I was running out of time and I wanted to just, you know, start them and see what would happen. So I did start them in cell trays. And so far, they're doing pretty good. But you do have some that are sensitive and they will not transplant well. You can read that on a seed packet. It will tell you, yes. Amaranth is a filler. A lot of people grow that. That's another one that you might want to just go ahead and start outside direct. So I think the biggest thing and one of the reasons why a lot of people start earlier and just start them in the seed trays is to extend the season, right? So you do get a season extension, but when you're putting them into the ground, just make sure you have time to harden the plant off. So right now I have a whole bunch of filler plants outside that I'm going to sell for bouquets and I'm just letting them sit outside and I'll do that for maybe 3 days. I know a couple, like some people do it for like a week or two. It's up to you. You go with your gut, but you do need time to harden the plant off. And that's just helping them to acclimate to the environment that they're going to go to. So the plants that I have right now, I have them literally on top of the soil in a tray with the light that they're going to get. And I leave them out there in the daytime and then I'll bring them back in. And then when I'm ready, when I know that I'm going to put them into the ground, I'll leave them for another few days to experience the cooler temperatures at night or whatever the night temperature is going to be. Because in my grow room, it's warm in there. Like I have it at least maybe like 72, 73 degrees at all time, day and night. And obviously that's not what's going to happen when they get outside. So you don't want to shock your plant. So give them that time to get used to your space, even your plants that you're bringing from home. I mean, from the garden center or wherever you're buying your plants from, you want to get them used to that space before you put them into the ground.
Get them acclimated. Yeah.
Yes, that's very important to do.
Okay, so we've talked about starting transplanting. Now the big question is, best practices for having a nice, juicy, long growing season, having nice, big, robust flowers. And I know the big question is deadheading and pinching, and you're supposed to pinch one flower now to get two flowers later. So please explain this practice, because I know it's big with cut flowers. It stresses me out.
I know, right? I know. It's something you just have to do it. But like one of the things we mentioned already is I think the number one main key is feeding those plants. So fertilizing and taking care of them, right? You also have the process of pinching, and that's, you're going to do that before you deadhead. You're going to pinch your plants when they're when they're strong, you see some leaves are coming out. So you'll have your first set of true leaves that form, right? You know, they're strong, and then you'll get another set of leaves and they'll be strong as well. I always wait for me and some other people that I notice, they wait till they get to that next set of leaves to know that their plant is doing good. You're confident. And then the plant will continue to kind of shoot up and produce more leaves. You want to pinch, and by pinching, you're basically either you're going to literally take your thumb and your index finger and take that stem that's growing out from the second set of leaves, and you're just going to take it off, or you're going to cut it off right there. And you guys can look this up. I feel like you would need a visual for this, but it's basically the process of cutting your plant in order to produce more stems, more leaves. It's going to produce more plants for you. It's going to make a plant more bushier. Typically, when you have a zinnia, it's going to grow straight up. But if you pinch that plant, it'll give you more stems, and more stems will produce more plants. Was that good, Maria? Do you got that?
Totally. Yeah, I just went through this with Melody. I started those snapdragons I mentioned. The snapdragons made it. The mouse did not. They were too small of a seed for the mouse to eat, but they're very leggy. And I have, I think, 7 or 8 plants. And Melody was like, you have to pinch. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And so we did an experiment and we pinched half of the snapdragon seedlings that I have. Yep. And I'm just going to compare and contrast like what pinching is. But yeah, she literally was just like, you just literally pinch the top. I mean, we're way past the second set of leaves. Like, I think we've got like 8 sets of leaves, a little late in the game. But she showed me other snapdragons in her garden that she pinched at an appropriate time. And they have like 8 stems on one plant, where yeah, my snapdragons are just one stem. So I think that'll be an interesting learning experience and something I didn't know.
Just make sure you have the space, because especially the snapdragons, I was just thinking like how big and how many more stems you'll have. And if you're just planning like, oh, I'm just going to grow a snapdragon and then I'll put another one right next to it. You know, like that's not something that you're going to want to put a plant directly next to, because you want the blooms. And so that will prevent you from having so many plants to put out into your growing space, especially if you're limited. So yes, I love it. You can, it's just so obvious. It's a good practice to do. I think most plants you should do it with. And again, it's just that main stem that you have, and you're kind of extending and making more stems and creating new leaves. So it's great.
So what about that first bud? When we see a flower's first bud, do we pinch a bud back too to encourage more growth? Or once a flower throws off a bud, we let that baby bloom?
Take it off. I just literally was doing that this morning. As long as it's not flowering, you can go ahead when it's that green little circle and it is surrounded by the leaf. Go ahead, just take it off. I literally just did that this morning.
Okay, so even do it just with the buds as you're going. And is that deadheading? So what's deadheading? Because I know that's another thing that gets talked about.
So deadheading is when your bloom, it's blooming and it's starting to fade away. It's dying or whatever. Just cut it off. Just cut it off and it will create, you'll get more flowers will come out and bloom, and that's it. That it's very you don't want it anyway.
So once it's dying, is there an area on the stem that I have to cut that spent bloom off? Or is it just literally removing the actual bud? Like, do I have to go back a node or anything like that? Or is it really just removing the flower?
It's literally removing the flower.
Okay.
Yep. You can do it with a scissor or you can do it with your hand, but whatever you want to do. Yep. Just getting rid of that.
Yeah. So that pinching, especially with those first blooms, that feels like it's going to be a painful practice of being like, oh, I could have a flower. But when you do that, it's going to actually instigate more blooms throughout the season, right? That's the thought process behind it.
Yes. Like we were doing that with geraniums because you don't want it to, you don't want to send signals to the plant that, okay, we want more flowers. And the plant is like, I'm being dramatic, but two inches tall. Like that's not what you're going for. You want it to focus its energy on building that foliage and getting taller and getting stronger.
So it's kind of like, even though pinching that bud at the beginning, when I'm like, oh, I want that flower, but instead you're pinching it away, you're sending signals to the plant to grow more foliage, to become a more robust plant that can support more blooms in the season, throughout the season, right?
Exactly, Maria. Okay. Perfect. Yes. Yep. It's hard to do. Like, it's like when you're first starting, because you're so proud of yourself mm-hmm. and you're like, I did this. Oh, it's coming. And then, oh, I got to let you go. But it has to be done.
It has to be done. I mean, but logically it does make sense because I look at my snapdragons or even like I have a tomato that has like four leaves and is already flowering. And I removed the flowers because I was like, this doesn't make sense yet. Like, I know you need more leaves to photosynthesize to like make some good fruit for me. So like, I'm going to do that. So I guess it's kind of the same thought with the flowers. Let me hit you with a few listener questions. We've covered a bunch of them. What about, our favorite peonies. So like my vision board is like a hedge of peonies. Anything specifically with peonies that you would suggest to like extend a good season of, you know, an established peony plant?
If it's established, that means that you've done what you needed to do to make it become established. So what I'm saying is that if it's established, it's going to last until the season. Like if it's the 99 weather and once it gets hotter, it's just gone. There's nothing you can do about it. Once that plant is established, you won't really have much problems out of it. It's a part of when you're starting it more so is that when you get this, it comes in like a little stick. And I know we didn't talk about bulbs and the different things, how the plants come, but the peony will come like, it looks like a little branch and it's important to take care of it from that stage in order to have that beautiful hedge of peonies. But once you get into a ground, it needs well-draining soil and it needs to be watered thoroughly. Maybe the first time you're putting it in there and then when it starts to bloom, you'll water it pretty good then. But after that, you'll be set to go. Like it's pretty faithful.
You know what? You brought up a good thing. We've only been talking about seeds, but there are several plants that come in bulbs and corms. So any quick, like I know like Melody like planted dahlias, she got like corms, and lilies, she got these, you know, bulbs or whatever lilies come in. So any tips for if you end up buying a bulb or a corm, like how to plant those suckers? And is it you just put them in the soil and you water them and they pop out?
I hate to say that is that simple, but for me it has almost been that simple. I will say this, if you go to like a big box store or whatever, I do not care. Open the box and look, because you can get, I've been in a situation to where I've opened when I got home and it's mold and it's just disgusting and you can't use it. So that would be my number one. And also research the company that you're buying from if you order them online, but they all have instructions on them. If you're going to do most bulbs or tubers, you'll do maybe like 5 to 6 inches into the ground. Or if you're going to do it into a container, it needs to be buried about 5 to 6 inches. You'll put it in there. Some will require water right away. And some of them you don't have to add water to at all until you see the first signs of leaves. And then you'll want to add a little water and put them into the sun. But I add a little bulb tone. It's a fertilizer. I put it at the base.
Yeah, Spoma Organics. That's my sponsor for our show. Shout out. You didn't even know that. That's awesome.
Yep.
Shout out.
Yep. It works good. I will say, because of my soil, and I was trying, like I'm a tester. So I just put that bulb tone in there with a prayer and like threw that in there. I'm like, I hope this works for this type of growing environment. And it worked very, very well. And you cover it up, you leave it alone, and it's good. Like it's pretty much that simple. Same thing with the lilies that I've grown. I started those in containers as well. I know elephant ears aren't necessarily a flower, but you know, a lot of gardeners grow those. Same thing. You get the, I don't know if they call it a corum, but you know, the elephant ears, they have the big, I don't know what it's called.
We'll call it a stub for now.
A stub. And same thing. You buy it, you put it in the container. It needs water. I keep it in a very hot area indoors, but it's easy, guys, for the most part. I think the most stressful part about it is, I won't say it's the stressful part at all. It's stressful for me because I do a lot of plants. I was about to say is the quantity, but I would add, if you are going to buy bulbs and you want to plant them in the fall, now is a time to do it. You'll catch a lot of sales and you'll get a lot of varieties now versus if you start buying them in the fall when you're going to put them into the ground. So that's just a little tip there.
That's another thing that's blown my mind with gardening is, number one, you can have like a year-round gardening season, even if you have a winter, and it's all about that fall planting for the spring. And I've learned, because I've worked with Territorial Seed Company, they specialize in garlic. And I didn't even like know about garlic before I started working with them. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, you plant it in the fall and then you've already got something in the spring. Like, that's so fun.
I would say this, and I'm saying this because it's on my mind. And I know you said you're going to give up on snapdragons, but there's a flower farmer. Her name is Alex, and she overwintered snapdragons, and she put them into the seeds are so small. She just kind of spread them out. And then she did a light mulch cover over them just to kind of keep them somewhat warm because they can take a little bit of a frost. And I lie to you not, right now, and she's in Vibe B, I believe, she has snapdragons. Beautiful.
Wow. So outdoors, she sprinkled in the fall snapdragon seeds in her ground outdoors.
Yep,
covered outdoors. It with mulch, let it snow. Heavily. So put a nice thick mulch covering between the seeds and the snow. Had a Colorado winter or a zone five winter. And then because the seeds were already there, they basically started outdoors.
Yep.
And grew. Wow. What's her handle? Let's go check her out. We'll put her information in the show notes so people can check her out if they're interested.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, well, to wrap this conversation up, can I even force you to tell me like what your top five favorite flowers to grow are? And this is just a personal thing, not a beginner versus advanced thing, but like, what are your Brooklyn favorite flowers that bring you the most joy?
Okay, so I'm going to go first with dahlias. Are maybe my number one, just because they are just so big. You can get tons of blooms and they're just, the color span is just, they're beautiful. I'm going to also say sunflowers would be number two, even though they could be a bit dramatic. They're just faithful to me. I love a faithful. So my next one is going to be, it's not a flower, but it is a leafy green just for summer, is a hosta, just because it comes back every year and it's not anything that you would put in a bouquet if you guys don't know what hostas are, but they were my mom's favorite. And so every year in my garden, I have to have those.
I love that.
That's a number three. And then my last two are, I'm not going to do flowers only because I feel like our additions, our foliage that we put into them makes our bouquets and makes the experience great too. And I'm going to say basil. I know you mentioned basil.
I was going to say that too. Okay. You tell me your five and then I'm going to tell you a funny story, but yes. Okay. Basil.
They flower. It's so many different types of basil.
Yeah, they flower.
And they flower beautifully and you can go from a deep purple to a beautiful green in foliage. They're so versatile. And then I'm also going to say, I'm going to lie and I'm going to, oh my gosh, I'm getting stuck between doing a flower.
If you need two more, I'll give you an extra.
Good. An extra would be, I'm just messing up. Okay. I'm just going to say, I love snapdragons. I love peonies. Amaranth in a bouquet
Oh yeah, my God. Beautiful.
As an addition, I'm just
beautiful.
Right,
that's just a filler. Right, okay, yes, well, filler. I'll tell you, since this episode is turning into like a dedication to our mothers who are flower fiends, flower power, what I wanted to share and leave the episode off with is I would love to encourage, just like you, our listeners to grow both edibles and flowers, because the Mama Fiella special, my mom grows this prolific garden every year. Anytime anyone comes over, or anytime we go to anyone's house in the summer, my mom takes a piece of tinfoil, so fancy, a piece of tinfoil. And in that piece of tinfoil, she puts a wet paper towel and she walks around her garden and she picks basil, thyme, parsley, rosemary. Wow. And then she picks a sunflower, rudbeckia, you know, an iris, whatever else is blooming. And she makes the most rustic bootleg gardeners, like tinfoil wrapped bouquet. But it smells unbelievable. And it brings so much joy to everyone we know, because you're getting a little edible and a little, you know, joyful flower. And I just feel like it's like her heart to whoever she's gifting it to. And like, that's what I'm truly excited about, you know, having my own garden and my own space is like, all I want to do is just make like tinfoil wrapped bouquets and give them to people. You know? So I love that you say basil, because like basil, even the leaves, I think is a filler in a bouquet is kind of fun because they're a nice smell.
Mint too. Mint as well. I know mint we didn't just talk about fillers, that a lot of my herbs and food plants
pop those right off too. There.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not that good at making them. Sorry. I'm saying I sell those off. The florist, she'll take them and make something very beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, baby's breath too. It's not a food plant, but they're so easy to grow. If you guys need a simple filler, baby's breath, but you have to continue to grow it all season long. But they're beautiful. I love your mom. Aww,
I love your
Thank
mom.
You for She's sharing that.
She sounds like a special lady, and I love that you grow hostas in her name, and they're a great shade plant too. Their hostas are like such a great land, you know, garden
easy.
Plant.
Yeah.
So this was such a fantastic conversation. I've adored getting to know you. Listeners are obviously going to want to come hang with you. Where can everyone find you? And we're going to put all your links in the show notes as well.
Thank you. This has just been so good. And for everyone that's listening, thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to us talk. And hopefully you're inspired to just grow something.
One thing. Yeah. Just grow one thing.
Yeah, just one thing. You can find me at Blooming Hills Farm on Instagram. So that's where you can find me at.
Those will all be linked in the show notes. I had fun. So thank you, Brooklyn. You're the best. Talk soon. All right, plant friends, let this be your sign. If you've been flower curious, but maybe intimidated, it's time. It's time to start growing flowers. It's been one of the most joyful things I've ever done in my garden. One pot of zinnia, one sunflower, one peony can change your level of joy for you and the people in your immediate life who you're going to make bouquets for. Flowers don't have to be complicated to be powerful. And make sure when you grow your cut flowers this summer, please tag me on Instagram so I can see your beautiful cut flowers and be green with envy, because a lot of the flowers that I used to love and grow when I lived in zone 5B, I can no longer grow in zone 10B. And you bet your bottom dollar, I will be growing all sorts of different flowers, tropical flowers in Florida this year. But I want to see your dahlia photos. That's what I really want. Anyway, I hope this episode helped informed you, inspired you, and of course, helped you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space.
If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the Planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.